Yeti, the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this Honorable Court.
Thank you. Be seated, please.
Good morning. The court has three matters on its oral submission docket. Justice O'Neill has had a death in the family and will not be attending these arguments, but will participate in each, as will Justice Medina. In the order of their appearance, oral argument will be heard in 040931, Sally W. Igal versus Bright Star Information Technology Group, Inc. and BRBA, Inc. from Dallas County and the 11th Court of Appeals District. Justice Heck is not sitting in this cause. Docket number 041049, NRA Poly America LP and others, an original proceeding. And Justice Willett is not sitting in that cause. And docket number 050126, the City of Rockwall, Texas versus Vester Hughes as sole independent executor of the estate of W.W. Farith, deceased, from Rockwall County and the 5th Court of Appeals District. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side in these matters and will take a brief recess between each argument. The arguments are being recorded and should be posted on the website by the end of the day today. We expect all arguments to be completed by noon. The court is now ready to hear argument in 040931, Sala W. Igal versus Bright Star Information Technology Group.
May it please the court, Mr. Charles Sarton will be guided by the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. The Court of Appeal opinion in this case should be reversed for two reasons. The first is because the court was in error when it said that the Workforce Commission was wrong in finding that it had no jurisdiction over this payday law claim. Secondly, even if the commission was wrong, claimants in the position of Mr. Igal should be given the right, should be entitled to be able to take the commission's ruling of no jurisdiction on its face and proceed to have to another tribunal to which he has the right to go to have his rights, his substantive rights, vindicated. Those are the two reasons we believe this should be reversed. The Court of Appeal below referred to an administrative rule of the Workforce Commission to say to establish jurisdiction in this case. That rule is contrary to or inconsistent with the statutory basis for jurisdiction, which is Texas Labor Code 61.051. That is the only statutory basis that a court can look at to establish jurisdiction.
The Labor Code says it's jurisdictional.
It does not say jurisdictional.
So in other contexts, affirmative defenses like statute of limitations are not jurisdiction. They're waivable defenses. Why should we not interpret Labor Code the same way?
Well, for several reasons, Your Honor. First, it's the way the agency in charge of administering its rules interpreted the statute. In other words, this court has said that the courts have to give deference, have to give serious consideration to the way that an administrative agency interprets the statutes that it administrates. Unless it's contrary.
Not on jurisdiction.
I'm sorry?
We don't let agencies decide what their own jurisdiction is.
Exactly. That you don't. That's exactly right. If I said that, I mistake. You don't. You let agencies, well, in any given context, an agency has the right to determine whether the conflict before it fits in with its jurisdiction.
Yes, but you were suggesting we defer to their rule about what their jurisdiction is. We don't normally.
No, sir. As a matter of fact, you don't. As a matter of fact, just the opposite. You can't. The statute tells us what the jurisdiction is. But in terms of how that jurisdiction is administered and how statutes that the agency is charged with administering are interpreted, you give deference to the agency. So, Your Honor, in continued response to your question, courts of appeal post-Dubai have looked at time-related statutory prerequisites as jurisdiction.
Well, not in UTMB versus Barrett. Cases like that, we've tried not to look at those things as jurisdictional. Dubai says statutory provisions or statutory provisions. If you don't meet them, you lose. But we, as DeVice explicitly says, we try not to say if you don't meet them, the judgment was out without jurisdiction. And even though money has changed hands and we're 20 years down the road, we're going to undo it because it was jurisdictional. Right?
Yes, sir. But it, the point of Dubai was to create stability and finality of a final judgment. Dubai, in this case, is being used to, in argument, for the reverse effect. In this case, we're using a party is trying to use Dubai to go behind to second-guess the agency, take what was a final judgment, turn it upside down and say it really wasn't.
If this is not, if we don't think this is jurisdictional, can you still win?
Yes, sir. I win for several reasons. The Payday Act is a cumulative remedy. The Payday Act is for the purpose of allowing typically small wage earners, often without counsel, with small amounts of money at stake, who can't afford litigation, to have their substantive rights adjudicated. What we have here is a unique situation in the sense that we have a litigant who has the resources to fight the battle, the procedural battle, but in the vast majority of cases, we don't have that. So if the purpose is to have the substantive rights adjudicated, we should accept the commission's ruling at face value, go on to the district court if he chooses, and have his rights. It's a matter of fairness and equity, but it's also a matter of the waste of judicial and agency and litigant resources if we have to fight a procedural battle for 3.5 years before we decide whether or not the substantive rights should be vindicated.
What kind of hearing actually took place? They actually had a hearing at the Payday Commission.
They had the preliminary hearing. Mr. Igel appealed. There was a hearing and an opinion written by the administrative law judge.
So what if you have a full-fledged merits hearing at the agency? Agency says, yeah, it looks like you filed one day late, but we're going to hear all the, bring in all the witnesses, do all the stuff. They make finding of fact on everything, but the first finding of fact is claimant loses because he filed on the 181st day. Can you do that one over again in state court?
Yes, because if there was no jurisdiction, well, what the ALJ said in this case was he loses because there is no jurisdiction. Now, the Administrative Procedures Act requires them to make findings.
Say they said he loses because he filed on the 181st day. Nothing about one jurisdiction one way or the other.
Well, I would argue that it remains jurisdictional.
In other words, what I'm asking, does the question whether we do it over again in state court, if it doesn't turn on jurisdiction, does it turn on whether there was what the substance of the hearing was or what the reason given by the commission for denying the claim was?
If I understand the court's question, if the ALJ didn't characterize the dismissal as one of jurisdiction, then I still think that's a question that would have to be decided by a district court in one way or the other, because what the claimant has the right to do after an ALJ ruling is appeal to the district court to appeal the ruling itself under that substantial evidence standard. And I see no reason why the issue of jurisdiction couldn't come into play. In this case, it's a little bit different because the agency said, we have no jurisdiction. So we still win because of the considerations that I raised. It's fairness and it's equity. It's given the purpose of the statute. We should give deference to the and take seriously how the agency itself interprets its jurisdiction. Because what we have here is we have a clear statement by the administrative law judge discussing jurisdiction, stating it only goes back 180 days. So the agency itself is interpreting 61.051C to be a jurisdictional standard. And there is no other statutory basis that I've been able to find, and that the Court of Appeal didn't find. The Court of Appeal went straight to the rule, which is separate from and inconsistent with the jurisdictional statement in, if one accepts that it's jurisdictional, and we submit that it is, of 61.051. The Court of Appeal says the rule establishes jurisdiction, and that is absolutely an incorrect statement of the law. So where we go is, well, then what does establish the jurisdiction? 61.051. And even if it doesn't, the equitable factors would require the court to allow Mr. Eigel to continue his claim, essentially start all over, because of the cumulative nature of his rights, his remedies, if you will. There seems to be no...
Yes. Tell me just a little bit about these Workforce Commission hearings. Assume this is a laborer, and I hadn't been to law school, not a very sophisticated person. They file claims saying I hadn't been paid, and that's about all it says.
Yes, sir.
Do they... Who puts on their case? How does that...
What the agency... And I did not participate in this, but I have participated in others, and it's to a great extent informal. They submit papers. He submits his claim. Employer submits his defenses. There's a preliminary ruling. And then if either side doesn't like the ruling, there is an appeal in which there is a hearing, an actual hearing with live witnesses before the administrative law judge. Ordinarily, it's telephonic. And in my experience, as many participate without lawyers on both sides as they do with. I mean, I've given advice to the clients. They say, well, it's only $1,250. Just tell me what to say and do, and he goes and does it himself. And that's the bulk of things. Maybe not $1,200, but certainly not the several hundred thousand I'm dealing with here. Once the ruling is issued on the appeal, the written ruling, as we have in the record in this case, then assuming that it is with jurisdiction, then to exhaust his administrative remedies, he has to appeal to the district court within a certain period of time on the substantial evidence standard.
Is your position a bit anomalous? You filed with the, I understand you weren't involved, but you and your client filed with the Workforce Commission, loses there, and then says, oh, but now I can try the courts because the commission's determination is not the one I wanted, and I should win. I believe in my facts. Just so happens the commission's determination may have been such that it may cut off some of those rights. So it's kind of a, I picked one course, that didn't work out, now I want to try another one. I guess your response to that is, well, the remedies are cumulative, or the commission approach is not exclusive. I guess that's your response, huh?
Well, that's one of my responses, Your Honor. The other response is we have to look at, the purpose of the Act, which is to allow these claimants to have their substantive rights adjudicated. By and large, most of them do not have the resources to second-guess the commission, who, in fact, ought to know what it's doing. This court has said that they're to be given deference. He should be able to say, okay, they tell me that they do not have jurisdiction. I want to get my substantive rights vindicated. I need to go to the courthouse. It cuts out, as we can see here, 3.5 years of wrangling over whether or not there's jurisdiction or not. We're 3.5 years into this case, and he still haven't had one witness talk about whether he should win or lose on the merits of the case. So,
well, the commission's determination does suggest a merits determination, doesn't it? It says, it provides some some indication of what the commission
says
thought
about. Since he was not
the,
terminated without cause.
Yes.
Correct? Now, isn't this, I mean, is it somewhat like a, you know, trial courts all the time, they have jury trials and there'll be motion for judgment, you know, a directed verdict. And the judge will say, I think there's no evidence to support this claim, but I'm going to let it go to the jury. And we'll see what happens. And then that way on appeal, if he's wrong on the first, you reach the merits. Is this in any way similar? The commission says we think we don't have jurisdiction, but we're going to hear the merits and make findings of fact and conclusions of law on the merits in the event that we're wrong. Why wouldn't that have some sort of res judicata effect?
Well, for several reasons, Your Honor. The Administrative Procedures Act requires the ALJs to have findings and conclusions.
Why couldn't there just be one finding and one conclusion? Filed late, no jurisdiction.
Well, I believe it's because that agency has interpreted its duties under the statute to include full findings and conclusions. But nevertheless, many, if not most, virtually all of the factual findings in this case have to do with when the wages became due and therefore when the period of 180 days began during which he had to file, by the end of which he had to file his claim. So in any district court proceeding, the court has to find some facts in order to establish whether or not it had jurisdiction. This is a little bit different than district court in that it basically all has to be done. It is, as a practice, all done in one hearing. In the district court, I can object to the jurisdiction. The court can have a jurisdiction hearing and determine that jurisdiction before we get into the merits of the case. These shortened and more informal proceedings in front of the Workforce Commission treat everything at once because we're trying to be efficient. We're trying to move on ahead.
Thank you, counsel. Any further questions?
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from the respondents.
May it please the court, Ms. Anne-Marie Finch will present argument for the respondent. May it please the court. First of all, I'd like to thank my colleague for being very cordial throughout all of these proceedings. It's nice to be able to litigate against an attorney who is both smart and cordial. And that, unfortunately, doesn't happen all the time, but I commend him on that. Thank you. One thing that he did say that I do believe was a misstatement was that this has been going on for 3.5 years. It's been going on for longer, 4.5 years. Mr. Igel was terminated in January of 2000. He filed his wage claim with the Wage Commission July 2001. In September of 2001, the Wage Commission dismissed it. He appealed under the administrative procedures set forth in the Act on October 5th. Then there were a series of commission hearings, November 27th, December 27th, 2001, and February 14th, 2002. There were telephonic hearings with live witnesses presenting all three times before the Texas Wage Commission. Then February 19th, 2002, the Payday Commission came out. In the Payday Commission, the parties were notified that if they wanted to file a motion for rehearing, they could do so within 14 days, or they could seek judicial review in a district court in Texas if they filed within 30 days. Mr. Igel did neither of those things.
If he had, he would have lost, because it's undisputed he filed on the 181st day.
It's hard to say. There were some of his claims that actually were after the 180.
There's a lot of things in the law that are gray, but the difference between 180 and 181 is not one of them. We, like it or not, toss people out on the 31st day. One, you know, I mean, that's not something that's going to change on appeal, is it? How could it?
I believe that some of his claims were filed within the 180th day.
Which ones would separate those out for me?
And rather than waste time, I can provide supplemental briefing, but I remember going through this at one point. In addition, he could have appealed to the district court, and the district court could have determined that there actually was jurisdiction. I think that the statement made by the Wage Commission that there was no jurisdiction was something akin to dicta. Basically, the Wage Commission was saying he didn't follow the procedural mechanism set forth in the statute. He didn't file within the 180th day.
Why would the commission go ahead and make determinations on the merits after deciding it had no jurisdiction? Usually that ends the discussion.
Actually, the statement
that... You have no authority to act if you have no jurisdiction.
Justice Wainwright, I believe that the court said the statement about jurisdiction as an aside. It was not a preliminary statement. It was towards the end of the decision, and it wasn't a preliminary determination. I think that the commission misunderstood that because a statutory requirement is mandatory, that it is jurisdictional. This is pre-Dubai, this decision. They didn't have that type of language. They didn't understand that the fact that a statutory requirement is mandatory doesn't automatically make it jurisdictional.
But they didn't say at the end of their order it was filed late. They said that at the start, right?
The decision actually... The decision actually went through the facts and the findings of facts before it determined and said that it had no jurisdiction.
What was that, a finding of fact or conclusion of law?
I believe it was a finding of fact.
When was the... If the commission decides claimant loses because he filed on the 181st day, why should that preclude subsequent lawsuit in court? You can file your law contract action in court 183rd days or 583 days.
Because the Wage Commission Act is one of those statutes where you choose. You choose to file either under the Payday Act with the administrative agency if you want to save money or for whatever reason, or you choose to file in a district court. A person always has that choice. In fact, there are some cases where a person initially filed under the administrative agency, decided they didn't want to pursue it, dismissed that claim, and then went forward in district court. As long as you don't have a final decision before the Wage Commission, you're free to go before the district court, and vice versa. You just can't do both. It's two bites at the apple, and our system just doesn't allow that.
But you would agree that it doesn't seem particularly fair that, as a matter of fact, filing with the commission was late. The commission goes ahead and makes a ruling that, you know, it's hardly a choice that's been made. You'd be falling outside of the time, so shouldn't you then have an opportunity to sue in district court?
Not when specific findings of fact and conclusions of law have been made. And I would also submit that once you choose and you end up with a final determination and you fail to ask for a motion for rehearing or appeal to a district court,
so it's a matter of a mistake, for example. Okay, I've got 210 days. Just screwed up, missed the statute, filed for this. Everybody agrees that you're way outside the time period that you can take advantage of the Wage Act. Still, you lose?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, ultimately, it's a failure to exhaust administrative remedies and a failure to timely file. But this court has repeatedly stated that the timeliness of filing isn't jurisdictional. It's a procedural requirement.
Dubai involved consideration of a court. court's action, district court general jurisdiction. Here we have an agency that already has admittedly limited jurisdiction. Why should Dubai apply directly to say this is not jurisdictional? We have a different situation, different circumstances, perhaps different interests, goals.
It is a somewhat different situation. However, Dubai should apply because it gives guidance as to when a situation is jurisdictional versus mandatory or procedural. And the agency itself can't create its own jurisdiction.
Right, in Dubai, we spent a lot of time talking about the constitutional grant of general jurisdiction to district courts and how that was very important, perhaps fundamental to the outcome there. Maybe you'd take a different view, but that general jurisdiction base, does that distinguish Dubai from an administrative agency consideration where it has limited jurisdiction from the beginning?
Not necessarily in this case, because it has concurrent jurisdiction. A claimant can choose to file initially with a district court. It's not required to initially file with the Wage Commission and exhaust his administrative remedies. He has two options. If he chooses one, he follows it through, or he chooses the other.
Let's say same case, except the commission says, Mr. Eagle, you win on this claim and on this claim and on this claim and on this claim, and you were 181 days, but we're going to waive the one-day file. So your client loses everything. Your client appeals. District judge tosses it all out because he was one day late, and that's whether jurisdictional or not, he was too late, and therefore he can't get it. Because he made his choice, even though he won everything, it's tossed out because it's a day late. He's just out of luck, can't file in the suit again, can't file in court.
Right.
So, in fact, this statute that was meant to help wage earners is a potential trap.
It's a potential trap, but it encourages wage earners to file quickly so that things don't keep going on. It allows evidence to be fresh. Typically, when someone is terminated and they believe they're owed wages, they move quickly. Especially in a situation where you have a high-level executive representative.
We're not talking about JP Court where you call up somebody on the phone and they file the pleadings for you. You've got to do some paperwork for this thing.
Very little. I mean, it's a piece of paper where you say, I was owed $200 and they failed to pay, or they took $200 out of my paycheck because I failed to return a cell phone. It's not a huge requirement, and it doesn't necessarily require lawyers.
I'm just wondering why, you know, if a lawyer picks the wrong court, filing the court, wrong venue, wrong jurisdiction, whatever, we transfer the case or extend the time to file somewhere else. I'm just wondering why lawyers get two bites at the apple, but unrepresented laborers don't. Even if they have a good claim, even if they've been told by the agency, you've got a great claim. Sorry, you're a day late, you made your choice, you're out of luck.
I find this akin to a notice of a claim under the EEOC. You fail to report it to the Texas Employment Commission or to the EEOC, you're barred. For the same type of reasons, the administrative agency.
But if the EEOC says your claim's no good, they don't say, and now you can't sue because you made your choice to file an EEOC. They say just the opposite. They send you a right-to-sue letter.
Actually, you have to file within a certain number of days.
That's right. But
and if you don't, you can't file.
But it doesn't. But it's not, you know, it's not a choice that, oh, you chose your administrative remedy if they think you've got a great, you know, and no good claim, you're stuck with it.
And I don't disagree with what you're saying.
How many of these are there? Has it been wildly popular? I've never heard about it. Wouldn't have known to go to these folks.
Claims under the Payday Act? I personally don't know any percentages. I do know that there is an attorney here in the audience from the Texas Wage Commission who might be able to answer your question. But. And if that's something you'd like supplemental briefing on, I'd be happy to
do that.
I'll
let you know.
I'll Google it.
So
And I do want to reiterate that the Wage Commission did make findings of fact. It made a number of findings of fact. It found that the claimant was not entitled to any unpaid wages. It found that his employment agreement was not being renewed, that his division was being dissolved, that he was notified of that, and that he was paid through the end of his contract period. Based on these determinations, I just find it disingenuous for the claimant to now try to seek a different ruling from a different court when he had the opportunity to seek review of this particular agency ruling, and he failed to do so. Does anyone have any other questions?
Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you.
Your Honors, the effect of the lower court's ruling is that this payday law claimant has had his right to have his substantive rights adjudicated taken away from him forever. That is the wrong that this court should correct. And it's I believe, easy for this court to correct it by looking at the Labor Code 61051, looking at what the courts of appeal have said about whether or not a time-related procedural prerequisite is jurisdictional. And what some of the courts have done, Austin, Dallas, and Houston First, have said, if the statute defines, enlarges, or restricts the class of causes the court may decide, it's jurisdictional. That is the way that the Workforce Commission in this ruling post-Dubai has categorized 61.051. They have said it is a matter of jurisdiction. This court should give deference and serious consideration because it is not an unreasonable conclusion and it is not inconsistent with the statute.
But if he filed it one day late, why don't they have all these hearings and issue all these fact findings?
Because that process does not have a mechanism to hear things preliminarily. And nobody brought it to their attention that I know of. In other words, I don't think the record reflects that the defendants, the respondents in the ALJ proceeding, were saying,
by the way, it's 181 days.
I'm sorry?
By the way, it's late. It's 181.
Yeah, I don't think they ever said they raised the issue. So it's the ALJ's judge, ALJ's duty to be mindful of the procedural requirements and its agency's jurisdiction. Now, I suppose they could have poured him out. They could have said, on the merits, you lose.
But why is it, if nobody raises statute of limitations in trial court way? Again, assuming again it's not jurisdictional. Jurisdiction can always be raised, et cetera, et cetera. But affirmative defense, statute of limitations not raised, it's waived. So they go ahead and adjudicate your guy and say he's got no claim. He loses.
Well, regardless of who would win or who would lose at that level, someone, either side, regardless of the outcome, the loser could always say to the district court, there was no jurisdiction. That doesn't give an advantage to either side. Anybody, my understanding of jurisdiction is never waived. It can always be brought up. I know it's argued that the commission may have misunderstood its statutory authority, but this court should listen to what the agency itself has to say about what it believes its jurisdiction is. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Counsel. The cause is submitted, and the court will now take a brief recess.
All right.